This is Let's Keep It Real with Sandy Joy Weston, your weekly dose of positivity with awesome stories and guests from all over the world. It's an opportunity to learn some great new things and expand your mind. We'll tackle topics from all areas of life, and as always with Sandy, the sky's the limit.
Hello, hello, my Let's Keep It Real people. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for your patience. You know, it's been a beat since we've been on, but it's okay because when I do bring you a guest, it's going to be an awesome guest and something that you've been talking to me about for a while. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Alex. Alex, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me. I love it.
I think, how did we meet, Alex? Did we meet through Claire? Is that true? I'm thinking yeah. Claire.
Claire had recommended me to you for the highlight, the person.
God, for Prop About Tuesday. That's right. Yeah. And then I met you and I'm like, wait a minute. You have to become on Let's Keep It Real.
Yep, that's how we met.
Yeah. And you also, I think you know a good friend of mine, Bev Weinberg.
Oh, yes. Bev is just a good human. She's awesome.
Good humans attract good humans. All right. Well, I want to read your bio and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
And if I bastardize your last name, you'll tell me. Okay.
No worries.
Alex Pilkington is the CEO of I'm Able Foundation. By the way, that's a beautiful name. I'm Able Foundation. I love that. A former Army Ranger. So many fun things about that. And a two-time entrepreneur, and he is leading a movement to empower people with disabilities through adaptive fitness and inclusive programs. He brings mission-driven leadership, strategic discipline, and a passion for building lasting impact. All right, Alex, what we do to all my Let's Keep It Real people, you get to pick. Ready for this? You
okay.
get to pick one word that pops into your head that best describes your past 30 days, and then you get to tell me why you picked it.
Driven.
Why does that word pop into your head?
Just in general, I'm a driven person. When you say the last 30 days, you know, the work that we're doing here at the foundation, you know, as I communicate to the team, it's a sense of urgency, right? People need us to do the work that we do. And that's what drives us to do what we're doing and to continually improve and get better and deliver.
Why in the past 30 days is it more? Like you're saying, yes, I'm a driven person, but we have a sense of urgency right now. Why right now?
Well, there's always a sense of urgency. So the past 30 days is no different than the last, 18 months. So, yeah, that's kind of how it rolls together.
All right, let's take a step back.
Okay.
Okay. You're in the Army.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I didn't know how far back we were going, but okay.
We're in the Army. I thought you were going to come out and bring on your uniform. All right, now I'm ready. Why that decision? Why did you go in the Army to become an Army Ranger?
So it was a funny story. So at that point in time, I grew up kind of in a rough neighborhood, had a rough start to life. I got to a point where, I was living on the streets, couch to couch, if you will. I made it through high school and I had a decision. Two things I was up against is one, I didn't know how to cook. Two, I didn't have a place to live. So I thought, hey, why not join the Army? First, I tried to join the Marines and they turned me down. And then literally walked out of the Marine Corps recruiting station into the Army depot there. And I said, give me the hardest thing you have. And they were like, yep, sign you up right here. So that's when I enlisted and went through the Ranger program and served in the 3rd Ranger Battalion. In hindsight, I should have learned how to cook and found a place to live. But it was an experience that, does not leave me. It's with me every day. Yeah. So true story.
Okay. So I have so many questions in there. So you need a place to sleep. Yeah. Check. You couldn't cook. Need to feed yourself. Okay. Whose idea though? What was like, okay, I'm going to go into the service. Like, that's what I'm going to do. Or did you think there was no other choice? I mean, you hit rock bottom and that's what was left.
No, I mean, I was walking on rock bottom, so I was comfortable with it. I just knew that I knew there was more about me and more for me, and I needed a better start. And at that point in time, I wasn't ready for college. That was just not even an option from an even
Yeah.
affordability perspective. So the Army seemed like, a good place where I could get a start, right?
Okay. And was there any family involvement here? Like mom, dad, sisters, brothers, anybody trying to help you here?
No, my we'll call it a dysfunctional
Oh, another one of those.
family. No, like I said, I've been driven since birth, so
Yeah.
I make my way.
Okay. And how long were you an Army Ranger?
So I did my initial 4 years.
Okay.
So
And the way you talk about it was an experience, but it's not one you would choose again.
That's always that funny question, right? It's like, would I choose it again? If I didn't know then what I know now, I probably wouldn't have chose it. But
Okay.
what I've gotten from it, and there's pros and cons to it, but what,
Of course.
the things that I've gotten from it have benefited me, if you will. The leadership model, my alignment with values of team leadership. How to treat people, build culture, all of those things serve me as I continue to move forward in my personal and professional life. They were there, they just needed to get uncovered. And that's what being in a Ranger really did for me. So, I mean, I had a rough time in the Army, just, as a young kid, figuring things out. It was a good experience. At
Yeah.
this point in my life, I wouldn't change it. No, the good, bad, and the ugly. I wouldn't change it
Yeah.
because it's responsible for where I am today.
I always say that. Okay, universe, I don't want to do that again, but I
Yeah.
can see why I did it, right? I don't want to do it again, but I can see why I did it. What was one of the, you said it was challenging. What was the most difficult thing for you as a young person being in?
Just the things that you were being asked to do at that point in time. A lot of things that we were doing were for those in the community, right? OPSEC, so Operation Security, and just. You join the military, you're like, hey, I'm going to join the military and do these things. But you're there to do a very specific job. And we were very good at doing that very specific job. That was really some of the challenge that I had is those jobs that we were doing were went against my values and my beliefs.
Yeah, I understand.
But at the end of the day, you have to make a choice if you want to go home or not. So I wanted to go home.
But you did your 4 years.
Yep, I survived.
That's right. Okay, so now take us forward. You get out of the service, and then what? What do you do next?
So before I went in the Army, I went through tech school and I was going through the masonry program. So when I got out of the Army, went back right into construction.
Oh.
So I joined a masonry company, and it was a good company. So I was there. I started at the very bottom. Again, taking those things that I learned while I was in the military about leadership and management and building, and building and developing cultures of people. I was fortunate to be in a situation where the small company, half a dozen people, small region working area, really rough people, staff, right, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to work with, we would pick, day release prisoners up from prison to work. This is like kind of at the point where I was starting to run my own crew and I had a truck and everything like that. And I got off on a story. And one of the guys I noticed I was driving him home after work one day, my wallet was on the dashboard. It was a little bit
Oh, no.
thinner than it was when I started. So I, confronted him and I'm driving this old dump truck with a stick shift. And next thing you know, a fight breaks out in the front seat of the truck and I'm still trying to drive and take things under control, and I wound up getting stabbed with a screwdriver on
Oh.
my ribs. So, I thought to myself, we got to have better people, right? you just, it's not a good element. So I was fortunate where the owner of the company would listen to what I had to say. And I had no idea what I was doing, but $500,000 company, half dozen people, time I was there, we brought them to about 15 million doing work in three different states.
Oh.
Close to 100 folks, implemented marketing and HR and standardized contracts, got preferred vendors. So we would, hey, if I buy all my materials from you, will you give us a discount? He's like, hey, do whatever you can. And that's what I did. And we got rid of those people who were going to stab you with a screwdriver and got,
An
elbow.
upside.
Yeah, got the right people in the right seats. And, I thought, hey, wow, this is something I really enjoy doing. I wanted to kind of do it some more. So that was my story of construction. And then at that point,
Many years were you there at that company?
oh boy, 12?
12. Okay. And take
Yeah.
us back. How old are you when you left that company?
So I was just about 30 when I left. Yeah, so 10, 11, 10 years, something like that. So I was 30 when I left. At that point, I had a wife and a kids and mortgage and.
Oh, so in between that, while you're getting stabbed with a screwdriver, you met your wife and you had kids.
Well, I actually met my wife in eighth grade, so we just didn't know at
Stop. That's a whole nother
that
podcast.
point.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Okay. Side
Yeah.
note. Okay. So you met your wife in eighth grade.
Right.
When did you become serious and decide you were going to marry her?
She found me in a bar a couple of weeks after I got out of the army.
Okay, so you broke up
Yeah.
along the way. You went in service, go out for a drink at a bar. Now you're in your 20s.
Yeah, my early 20s. And then the caveat there is I grew up in an alcoholic environment, so I didn't drink. Joining the army made me drink, so I continued it for a little bit, but it stopped.
Okay. That Coke Club Soda. Okay. So now you meet your wife,
Yes.
but you hadn't seen her in how many years?
Five.
Okay. Okay, then what happened? Tell us more. We like this.
Yeah.
So you're in a
Well,
bar. What's her name?
Kelly.
Kelly.
Yeah.
Haven't seen her in 5 years.
Yeah, we closed the bar. We stood in the parking lot until 5:30 and talking. I went to work with, no sleep.
Still riding high, though. Still riding high.
Yep, and it's been we've been together ever since.
So, okay. How long did it take for you to get engaged since the parking garage or the parking lot?
Probably about a year. So then,
So you dated a year and you
yeah,
got married.
and then we married in got married in October of 05. So
So while you're at the screwdriver in the ribs company, you were raising kids, right? And then you left there after 12 years. Okay, we're with you. What happened next?
So she came home one day with a computer. She was working in the corporate world, and she's like, "Hey, they're selling these old computers. We should buy one." And I was resilient. I'm like, "No," I resisted. "We don't need one of those." I think my exact comment was, "We already have a microwave. We don't need one of those." So that led me into going to. I wound up hurting my back pretty badly, so I was in a position of, I got to make a change. So I decided to go to computer school. Ironic.
Wait a
And
minute, what year are we that you told her it was like your microwave?
2000.
Okay.
Yeah, 2000. So we're very early 2000. So I went, this was like January of 2000. So I went to computer school, did my 8 months or whatever it was in the computer school. And mind you, I was the older guy in the class and everybody else was getting hired. And, and I quickly realized I wasn't. I had one interview. The gentleman had made a comment. He's like, "Well, yeah, you're not exactly what I was expecting because, I had what on my resume. I didn't have any experience." So I was in a position like, okay, now what? I didn't want to get divorced. I didn't want to lose my house. So I got to figure
Or
something
your
out.
kids, let's
Right.
not forget them.
Kid. So I did what most people would do. And I started a technology company with my 8 months of experience.
That's
My
what I was, that was on the forefront of my tongue. Yeah, let's start a company. Yeah.
One of my very first customers was like, "Hey, can you build me a web server farm?" I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely. I can do that." Literally went home, Sandy, got on the computer, dingling dial up, and I'm like, typed into Ask Jeeves, what is a computer, web server farm? So it was kind of I wound up hiring a lot of people that I went to school with in the computer school because they were smarter than I was. I knew
Good
that.
move. Good move.
My wife at that time had started a law firm. So I wound up getting her and her partner. I wound up getting their technology
Good.
work, which escalated into other law firms and so on and so forth. So I wound up running that company for about 6 years. We did probably closed out somewhere 18 million, 15, 18, $19 million at that point in time. One of the first guys I hired, he was interested and I sold the company to him.
Oh.
Yeah, so part of that discussion was that they wanted to, or he wanted to reposition it for sale eventually. So I created a board of advisors. I sat on that board as the chair, and we guided that organization to be acquired by a large technology company in California several years later.
Wow.
We had
Thank
companies.
God for Kelly.
Yeah, right.
Microwave.
Yeah. Who would have thought? You never know, right? Because you never know where opportunity is. So it was companies reacquired. We had companies, we had contracts with Merck and DuPont, Bristol Myers Squibb. So there was many times I'm sitting in these high level discussions with senior level executives, kind of having this out of body experience. Like, I'm just a kid from Jersey. What do I know, right? I was on the street too long ago, and I got stabbed with a screwdriver. I've been stabbed twice, so just to FYI, it's not like a, it's a thing. So, it's
Two things more for me. I don't think.
so it was just like this, and I never really had that imposter syndrome because I'm like, I can figure it out, right? I knew
Well, of
enough,
course, you look what you did. Like,
right?
what's a website? All right.
I knew I wasn't the smartest person in the room. I know I didn't have to be, but I needed to surround myself with people who, who were smarter than I was and
Which
provide
is
that information.
brilliant, brilliant. Which is your first tip? Leadership starts from within. Look at what you did. Like, okay, I may not know enough about this, but I know people who do, and I can bring them together and lead them.
There's a the fault line of leadership beliefs these days is that the leaders have to be the smartest and they have to be. They have to be, they can't be humble, right? And I think that's when leadership breaks down. You want somebody to follow you. You want someone to get up out of that foxhole and kind of run across an area where they might get hurt, or worse. They better believe in something more than, So that's kind of my philosophy. And I still use that to this day,
I mean, I was very fortunate too. At a very young age, my mentors were like, surround yourself with people that you believe are more brilliant than you in that area of life. So it used to become my tagline when I didn't know something. Don't worry, I know a guy. I know a guy who knows a guy.
Right.
And I was okay. Like, yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. Go forth and conquer. And that really was my secret to success.
Right.
And I loved it. I loved it.
Leadership starts from within, and it's, part of that is being honest with yourself, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses aren't, are, and being disciplined for yourself, living up to values and those sorts of things.
I'm not saying all leaders have to be this way, but I owned health clubs, and if something happened and the maintenance guy wasn't there, I'd be going in, plunging the toilet. I wouldn't send my staff in to do something I wouldn't do. And they were like, you shouldn't be doing that. I'm like, well, I'm here. Well, I'm not going to ask you to do something I wouldn't do. And I'm not saying that's everybody's, but I do think that was another one of my secret sauces. All right. So now here we are. You sold the company. It's surreal. All from starting with your wife bringing home a computer that you didn't want to have anything to do with, but then you didn't want to get divorced and lose your home. So why not? Okay. Now, what are you going to do? Travel around the world after you sold your company?
No, I went looking for that next thing. I did some consulting for some of our clients for a while. Merck was one of them. It was an area that I thought that I enjoyed being, consulting to me was always the, I like to help, I want to be involved in things. I want to, make things better. So the consulting route was a good avenue, my release for that. And then I wound up getting kind of get attracted to the startup world.
Oh.
So I wound up joining this other organization. It was a startup, very a couple of years old at that point in time. Fortunately, this was like 2008. I came in, was number three or four at the leadership level. At that point in time, and there I wound up right before there, I wound up getting my bachelor's degree in business. So,
Okay. Where'd you go?
I went to University of Phoenix, right? I saw that people in the direction I was heading had degrees, right? And I had business ownership and successes, but I felt like I wanted that education.
Good for you.
So that just continued on another path. So I started with this organization, 2008, had a lot of most of the eggs were in the financial services basket, had one pharmaceutical client. And as we all know, 2009 happened. The financial industry collapsed, and the company went, we wanted to do like about 300% growth over that year or so that I was there. And so they wound up kind of shuttering for a bit during 2009 because most financial
Yeah.
services companies are closing. So at that point in time, a guy I was working with and somebody we both knew outside of the company had this brilliant idea to like, hey, let's start a company, right? Why not? Start a company when you have no experience, or you start a company in the worst, economic downturn in most of our,
What's the downside? Yeah.
right? What can go wrong?
Yeah.
Well, ironically, so we did okay. There was a strong belief at that point in time for me is like, hey, if companies and leaders thought more strategically instead of reactive, right? We might not be in this situation. But also, if leaders had better tool sets, not just the this is how the school has taught me to lead, right? Kind of bringing that special operations group leadership to the forefront and strategic planning and execution. So we've really formed the organization around that model, from a consulting management perspective. And we were we did we ran the organization for five, 6 years, something like that. There were some challenges with the partnerships, as most partnerships are, and we decided to go our separate ways, and we sold the organization, dismantled it, and went from there. So it was fun while it lasted.
Was it fun? Was it fun?
It was fun. It was good to be in a group of people as opposed to being alone. Being alone
Yeah.
starting a business is, right? Man, it's the loneliest place you can possibly be. Every decision is just another gray hair. So it was fun to have, people that had skill sets that I didn't have, right? That could bring things to the table. Fortunately, one of the partners was not as skilled as we had hoped. So sales suffered, but we qu quickly learned. So there was it was positive for the most part. We did enjoy what we do, what we did. But when the partnership became a bit more strained, it just was like,
Yeah.
okay, this isn't fun anymore. Yeah.
Okay, so you've had like eight lifetimes already and reinvented yourself.
We're only getting started.
I know, and it's like we're still at this end. Okay, so now let's take a breath here. And I'm seeing the pattern of you really, really are great at leadership, and you're realizing it through everything you're doing, your skill set. Like, you can you tell at this point?
I mean, I've always had confidence in myself, my
Yeah.
ability to, adapt and learn. But I'm cautious about saying that I'm an entrepreneur. I'm not. I was put in two situations where I had a choice. And the choice, I made the choice and I started organizations because I had no one else to depend on but myself. And I knew I wouldn't let myself down. Right. First company, because I couldn't find work. Nobody was hiring me. I was too old, too whatever. Second, it had to get done. The world was crashing and I'm like, why not
Yeah.
start? So, I've never really, I
I
never.
get it. You said you became an entrepreneur out of necessity. It's not like you're saying you had this bug in you, but it's still an entrepreneur, whatever way got you there. But I understand what you're saying. Okay. So for the people out there that are listening, who, whether they are entrepreneurs or they always want to improve on their leadership skill, I got a few questions for you.
Okay.
Stop you right now because we're still not even getting into I am able servant leadership. Yeah. So I can't even wait for that. All right. But I got a bunch of these. And so we'll just call them Billy Bob because I make up names.
Okay.
Okay. We'll just go with it.
Oh, this sounds.
Dear Alex. Okay. My dad has been drilling me since a kid. Be a good leader. Lead by example. Consider all the other people around you. Take a big picture. Don't just look at the one narrow view. Make sure you listen to everyone. And the person says, because he's like me, I say this, cool, cool, cool. But what happens when you have a boss who sucks wad and doesn't do that? And every time you have an idea, he steals the idea. And all you want to do is do a great job and work your way up. I don't want to be an entrepreneur, but I don't know what to do within the company. Should I just leave? How can you answer that? But I'm throwing it out, Alex.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is that if you have that type of person who's, you know, responsible for you and they're acting in that manner, they're not a good leader. They're not going to recognize you for who you are. You are not going to progress in that environment, right? If that's the culture of the environment, right, then you're not going to, you know, you're not going to move anywhere within that organization. The quicker you realize that, and then the quicker you begin to plan and for those next steps to help to position you as best as possible in your next, you know, next position, the better off you're going to be. It's,
yeah,
right. You're, everybody has an energy, whether you buy into that or not, we all have an energy. And when you're in the right place, your energy is accepted. It's amplified. When you're not in the right place, that energy is suppressed, right? And it affects your body, affects your mind, affects your relationships. So you can associate with the term flow, right? When you find the flow, that flow state, that's what that is. If you're not in that flow state, or if you're not looking for it, or if you're in a, you know, a negative environment, it's not gonna, you're not going to make that change. You have to be in an environment that, you know, supports that.
So good. Billy Bob basically saying, get out.
Yeah. Time to leave. Man. Time to leave. Right.
Okay. This is a good one.
Okay.
Call her Sally Bell. Sally Bell, dear Alex, I've been with the same financial institution bank for 20 years. Operations management. Love what I do. Love the people. Until the new boss, who is best friends with the president. I'm just going to say it. I don't think there's a human that likes him. Not only is he mean-spirited, but he also falls asleep during meetings and he falls asleep on phone calls. But I can't see him going anywhere. After being there and risking all my benefits, which I'll get in 5 years, I'm considering leaving. I don't think I could stay another 5 years. I've always loved the nonprofit segment. Please advise. I won't leave until I have something, but I think I do need a big shift. I don't know if I want to go into banking, even though I won't let this guy sour me. Please help.
Well, internal resilience is an important thing, right? And I understand the position she's in, right? She can see the light at the end of the tunnel and won't give up her benefits and the scenario overall. I can tell you that nobody moves into the nonprofit space if you're looking to get rich from a financial perspective.
Okay.
From a quality of life and fulfillment perspective, there is no amount of dollars that you can put on that experience. That experience, like for me being at I'm Able, has both enriched my life personally as well as professionally. More so than it ever has, right? I've always been driven to do things, but there's a different drive. My drive now is improving the quality of somebody's life. I take that very personal. So do your research, right? Look for, if you're trying to survive those next couple of years, maybe find something that gives you that fulfillment that will help you buy that buy time, right? And being at some one point in time in history, right, being in an organization for 20, 30, 40 years was commendable.
Yeah.
A certain age group, and it would be great, get a job, be there, retire, you move up, you can see a future, you can support a family, etc. Those days, unfortunately, I think are gone.
Yeah.
So being active in the networking community, looking for new opportunities, especially in this marketplace, is always a challenge, but maybe find something that's different that will provide you some different fulfillment.
I like that. But I like that option. Or if she's moving into it, realize it's not for the financial change because she's probably after 20 years making a lot more as a VP, in fact.
Yes.
All right. So now let's get back to your story because we're hanging here. Here you are. That company went off. And now what? What's next? I'm so excited to find out how you got where you are.
Well, I can give you the kind of rough the run-through version. So at that point, I just did a little bit more consulting. I was doing probably some fractional work. I wound up getting connected with an organization that was looking to go national. So a small financial services company.
Okay.
So I
Still
was,
in the financial world. Still in the financial world.
yeah. Well, I mean, first organizations were really kind of agnostic to industry. We had a niche, but so this is a financial services company. I was there for 3 years. I wound up taking them national. We opened up several branches in a few different states, several branches, several different states. Grew staff, grew revenue, provide
Seeing a
service.
pattern here, Alex. I'm seeing a pattern.
Yeah, I get a lot of fulfillment in that, as I call it, parachuting into the firestorm.
Yeah.
There was some challenges with this organization, unlike any other that I've ever experienced. From a bad, the leader of the organization was not a good person. We'll call it that.
Okay.
So, So I was there. We took them. We did. We set out. We accomplished what we set out to accomplish. So we were there. After that, I guess I was kind of back in the consulting space, doing some fractional work. I wound up taking a role, a term role with a bank in North Carolina. So I was there for 2 years, commuting back and forth.
Are you 90?
No.
My God.
So I was with them for a little bit, helped them to move the needle on a lot of different areas. Enjoyed that, and really enjoyed the people and the culture there. That role ended. I came back to PA and started really focusing on the fractional COO type
Oh.
work. I was really enjoyed that part of it. I believe that's when I surely a few years after that is when I got connected with Claire Kohler.
Oh, yeah.
We wound up developing, we just clicked. I don't even remember how we met, but we just clicked on the leadership component, and we wound up developing a leadership model off of both of our experiences, the five pillars.
Yeah.
Right. And we wound
Love
up
that. I love the five pillars.
teaching a leadership cohort almost a year, I guess. So we developed the plan, the material, the content, and we wound up teaching it virtually. It was kind of around that time frame. Really enjoyed working with her on that. Really enjoyed being able to, get those years of experience out of my head into some type of content. We made a few videos. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, she's
Yeah.
great.
And then, or I'm sorry, actually, before I met Claire, that's right. I held a role with a startup as a chief strategy officer. Very short term. On that one, we wound up not getting our funding series, and it was a leadership company that was trying to develop a leadership model for civilian executives based on the special operations leadership model, which obviously I was like, hey, I can do that. Sounds
Yeah.
good. Ironically, yeah, it just didn't work out, but we missed the series, the funding, and And then I met Claire. She saw that. Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
So I want to just get, like,
yeah,
for all the people out there, I get so many people writing in that they're afraid to leave or quit or do this because it may not work out. And I'm looking at different things, and some worked out and some didn't. And you got some things that you can say were takeaways, and then this didn't work out. So right. Do you not have that fear of failure? Because no. To me, I look at failure a different way. When I don't, not that I don't want to succeed, but if I don't put myself out there, that to me is failure. If I don't try it, I'm failure.
Right. You're right. I think I have a healthy fear of failure, right? But I don't, it's not a fear of failure as much as it is like, okay, the only failure is something that you're going to not learn from. That's when you fail. So if I'm able to learn, from that, you know, that failure. And also, I think the part that most people miss too is like, failure is a good learning experience, and it's going to happen. It's how you treat yourself after that failure is the important part. Because, you know, hey, I fail. I'm going to beat myself up. I'm a loser. I can't do anything.
Yeah.
Whatever that language you're using, that negative language you use towards yourself, is what you replicate. You know, one of my 5 points, right? Your habits determine more than you think. And, you know, what you plan for or don't will happen. So failure is a tool that you can learn from. And, you know, I like the fail fast model, right? Figure it out, fail fast, plan, do, act. So, I mean, I've embraced the fact that I'm going to fail. That's understandable. I don't want to fail at the, you know, and have it cost somebody else, right? So, you know, I've always done like an assessment, you know, the internal and external assessment of failure. Okay, what did I do? What external factors had a contributing, you know, contribution to my failure? Okay, what can I change? What's within my power? So that's how I approach it.
It's surprising. I was meeting with a group of entrepreneurs, and there was like 200 of them. And the biggest thing is still, and they were young. They were, keep that in mind. They were young. They still in their heads, I'm going to say at least 80% of them, they said they wouldn't be able to handle it. It would be mind blowing. And then what would they tell their parents? That's what I kept hearing. Like, well, I have to go full in. I told my parents I was going full in to this, whatever they were going to start up. And it didn't work out. I hear this over and over again. But if I go back to work part-time, I'm going to look like a failure to my family.
Yeah, no. Right?
So I would love for you to answer that, because I get that over in your words. Like, I remember I met this guy who was a medical doctor, and he stopped doing that on the side because he wanted to help him, and he did it. But he wasn't making money after a year, and he has 3 kids, and the wife was trying to support him, but there was all the savings running out. And I said, did you like being a doctor? Because, yeah, but I didn't like working for that group. And I was like, well, did you consider maybe working for another group while you're trying to do, let's just say, make money off a podcast, right?
Right.
And finally, when I got down to it, Alex, it shocked me. He's like, but what do I tell my mom and my brother? And this guy was in his late 30s. I'm like, what about your wife and 3 kids?
Very good point.
So how do you reframe that so he doesn't feel like he's failing if he has to work part-time or full-time while he's building up the business?
You know, if you look at my resume, my LinkedIn, whatever, you know, it looks good on paper, right? And, you know, you can say, oh, wow, you can see the succession and everything like that. And you know what? I wish I could align with that, you know, but a lot of that has just been, I have to make a decision. I have to react and respond, right? I didn't have a clear path. It wasn't like, I'm going to go here, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. It was, okay, now I'm here. Now I have to figure it out. And I know, you know, especially like in the first business, you know, even with the second business, I thought I knew something. Well, then, you know, there's some applicability, but not exactly. So you still have to figure it out. And I think if you're, I've never had that experience as far as, well, if I fail, what am I going to say to my mom or whatever,
Yeah.
right? The fact that, I was in a
And he's
situation.
never gotten approval before, so he's trying to get that approval.
Yeah, that takes me back to the leadership within, right? You have to be responsible for yourself, right? Your approval is what you feel you should approve. It's what you believe is the right thing to do, as long as it's healthy and, ethical and all those things, right? That's your guide. If you're living by someone else's stick, right, and they're guiding you, you're never going to match up, right? You have
I
to.
like that. Somebody else's stick.
Right. So you're never going to measure up to someone else's, whatever. And I think the sooner you kind of embrace that, that's just a good start. But entrepreneur or whatever you're doing, failure is a tool to learn and grow from. If you change that perspective, right, as in I said, my tips here is like the growth mindset.
Yeah.
This didn't work out. How am I going to do it differently? Right. Like, how many times are you going to reinvent the light bulb? So failure is a tool, just
I
like
love that.
success is a tool.
I love that. That takes so much pressure off yourself.
Right. And you got to be kind to yourself.
Yeah. You said that right before we cut on. I'm gonna be kind to myself. I always say I'm giving myself grace here.
Yeah. I'd like to say the perfect thing and, everything along those lines, but you know what? I don't sometimes, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Right.
More than
My actions will speak.
All right. I knew this. I knew we were going to keep talking. We're going to be running out of time. And I want to make sure we
I
get
hear
to
you.
where you are now. So take us after Claire. I want to hear a little bit more what took you down the path of I Am Able Foundation.
Yes. So never in my wildest dreams have I ever thought, even considered a nonprofit. So I met the founder, so we had a mutual connection that said, "Hey, I have this veteran friend. He's in Reading. Would you be interested?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm always up for meeting veterans." And then he says, "Well, he's a Marine." And I'm like, "Well, never mind." So hopefully there's any Marines out there, but no. So I wound up meeting Chris Keg, who's the founder of I'm Able, right?
Okay. He was
And
always a Marine.
yeah, he's a Marine. Just one of the greatest guys you'll ever meet. It didn't matter, right? So he was a Marine or not, but
Yeah.
so he, at the time, he had a for-profit gym, CrossFit, or not CrossFit, it was Core Fitness,
Core fitness.
and the I'm Able Foundations, which started in 2007. So Chris was a Marine. He wound up developing a nerve degenerative disease, which actually turns out to be hereditary. So it
Wow.
started out where he started having foot drop, leg weakness, led to canes, two canes, crutches, eventually into a wheelchair. Did wind up getting medically discharged from the Marine Corps. But as any typical and every Marine, that is, they are not stops, right? They're not obstacles. It was just another opportunity for him to figure it out. So he wound up starting a gym out of the back of his car. Right, being able to walk on crutches and such, he started an event called Got the Nerve, which we just had the 2 weeks ago. And
Freaking love that name.
yeah, so Got the Nerve is a triathlon. It's a triathlon for, we use the word adaptive instead of disabled internally, but
I love that.
it's
You
an
use
inclusive,
adaptive,
yeah.
adaptive.
So it's an inclusive event. It's an inclusive triathlon of all abilities, right? And so
That's
he,
awesome.
it is, and until you witness it, it's something else. So he started Got the Nerve as a way to raise funds for research for his condition. After
Okay.
3 years, he was like, "Hey, I should start my own thing, the foundation." So in 2007, that's when I'm Able was founded. So I'm Able at the time started out with providing, funding grants to people. As Chris says, being disabled is not cheap, right? So fast forward, I was, Chris and I had met the first time. We just hit it off. We stayed in touch. He reached out to me one day and he's like, "Hey, I want to sell my for-profit gym so I can focus on the nonprofit. Can you help me? I've had experience with exits. So I'm like, yep, I'll dive in. And I wasn't doing anything at the time anyway. So I'm like, dude, see what we can do.
Perfect timing. And what year is this? Tell me what year.
2020, 2020-ish, mid-year,
Oh,
mid-year
during
2020.
COVID?
So it was a lot of virtual.
Okay.
There was that. And so we wound up doing the transition. He was doing his thing. Actually, was it 2020? It was early 2020. So he was doing his thing. I was, doing my thing. And then, like I said, I wasn't ready to retire, but I wanted to do something. He and I stayed in touch, met for coffee a couple times. At this point, he's in a chair and, he's got that Marine, voice leading 5 o'clock in the morning workouts and such like that. So we wound up getting together for coffee again in 2021, around April, May, something like that, maybe May. And I'm like, hey, how's it going? He's like, oh, I've kind of gone as far as I can go. I'm not really sure how to do it to move it next. One thing about, and this is not just with nonprofits, it's with any organization, right? You might be very good at that widget, right? Starting that widget, but you might not necessarily be the best at managing people or company organization or that type of thing.
Gotcha.
Right. So he asked what I was up to. I'm like, I'm not ready to retire. I was kind of looking for something to do, but I'm done with the consulting thing. I'm looking for a home, right? A purpose. I needed a purpose to continue, having that energy, to be honest with you. And he's like, I could see how you could help us. He goes, but I don't think you can afford, I don't think we can afford you. I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. You can't afford me. So, but I'm also not in it for the money or the title. If you're leading, if you lead with that, you're going to miss fulfillment.
Oh my God.
The focus areas for me is, leadership, management, and accountability, right? That's
Leadership, say the management and
accountability,
accountability.
right?
Okay.
And that starts at first person, self-leadership, self-management, and self-accountability. If you can't, as a leader, hold yourself to those three, you can't hold others to it.
I'm thinking here, it's so easy to say, okay, leadership, management, and accountability. And some of the letters we're not getting to were saying, then how did so many horrible leaders get to the top? And even making money. So I've gotten like letters after letters of people going. So ask Alex if, would they know what a good leader should be? They want to be a great leader. How is it possible that so many of these people are not great leaders in these huge companies?
So you know the saying, right? People don't leave companies, they leave poor leaders or poor managers, right? My own experience and what I've observed in my lifetime is to like the one organization, financial services company, he started that company. And his turnover rate was just insane, right? So there's that. People who move their way up the corporate ladder who are poor leaders generally have gotten there. And I don't, this is my opinion, what I've observed in countless hundreds of organizations is they started there, they've known somebody, right, that mirrored them, right? Hey, you look like me, you act like me. All right, and they get the job done, right, at any cost. And that's what the focus is like get the job done, increase bottom line, increase sales, increase X, right? And while that they're tangible results, right? We've raised revenue by, 1,000%. The soft results, the hard and soft impact that you don't see is okay, there's higher turnover. There's people who are just miserable. They don't like what they're doing. They're working for poor people. So those people, they know somebody, they've gotten in those positions, they've been elevated through those roles because, that person above them says, hey, you look like me, you sound like me, you be like me, right? You get results and so on. So I think bad leadership fosters bad leadership. And then I'm gonna go back to what I just said, lead, manage, and accountability. There are organizations that don't hold people accountable, and that's how those people continue to fought to, thrive and be in organizations.
So how do they then convince their leadership that they'll be more profitable if they're not that way? Do you know what I mean? Because like that's the sticky wicket in.
I had a consulting engagement one time where this company was, they were on the verge of bankruptcy. And they were, I would probably say they were a little less than $75 million, something like that. And I met the leader, CEO of the organization, and immediately I was just like, something's off here. And I could see when looking at the financials and okay, something's not off. Why are you looking at filing, chaptering? And as the engagement went on, I'm making these recommendations. Like, these are hardcore recommendations to continue not just being profitable, but continue the business. Do you want this? Right? If someone were to come to me, in one of my businesses and say, hey, look, if you don't make this change, you're going to lose everything. Well, I'm going to go, okay, let's figure out what we got to do to make the change. And I attribute that kind of to my background. So this gentleman was like, I presented this, the information, right? We had a whole team. This is what we're looking at. These are my recommendations of things we have to, offset, change, make different, et cetera, et cetera. And just the, I know, the lackadaisical interest in the reality of the situation, right? There was things like, so he had this tropical water system in the building, right? And all these tropical plants. And it looked beautiful. And it was like something like 50 grand a month just to maintain. Just to maintain. And the environment was really like high humidity. So there's computer issues. It was strange. Adamant about not getting rid of that. I'm like, you're going to choose, and the result, and the pushback was, well, can we downsize the department? So you're going to choose your tropical plants that cost you 50 grand a month that don't bring in any revenue, right?
I got you.
And you're going to downsize the department or people who do bring in revenue as your solution to offset cost. So I tried, 14 ways to Sunday to explain it to him. And so the lesson learned is that
I want to hear the lesson learned.
you can't tell people things that they don't want to, if they're not open-minded, right? And that's the reality of it. You're not going, the more energy you put into somebody to try to change them, the less energy you're going to have at the end of the day, right? So it's unfortunate. And it's rampant. And I think that there are less good leaders out there, right? I had a conversation once with Claire, and she was, we were talking about servant leadership, and somebody she had an interaction with, and one of her engagements, and servant leadership. When you say the word servant leadership, there are people who are like, oh, so that means that staff, like delegating, telling them what to do. And I'm like, so they're serving you. And they're like, well, yeah, that's kind of what servant leadership is. And I'm like, that's the exact opposite of what servant leadership is, right? It's not about those people serving you. It's actually what, as a servant leader truly is, the essence of it is, and I tell this to my staff, my job is to create an environment, right? To give you the education, the education, the experience, the things that fulfill you, that make you want to stay here, but train you to leave, right? I want you to make a choice to be here every day because you're getting fulfillment. But I'm making you marketable in case you want to go. But my job is to create an environment where you want to be a part of, and that you can see success. And my job is to help you be successful, give you the tools, right, that you can do your job, with the least amount of barrier. So, needless to say, that company, after a lot of money spent on consulting and plants and all sorts of other crazy expenses, chose not to do that. He chose the chapter, restructured, closed, and reopened another organization under a different name doing the same work. So,
with or without tropical plants?
I'm sure, same building. Didn't move. Changed the color of the sign. That was it.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, it's they're out there. It's a real thing.
Oh, my. It's craziness. It's okay. All right. So.
Yeah. Chris.
What a story. Oh, my God. All right. So now you meet him. You meet him again for coffee. He can't afford you. What happened?
So I started with them as their COO on July 3rd, 21. And so, you know, I quickly realized
hey,
that.
But like, but why? Like, do you know what I mean? Because like what made you go, okay, I'm going to do this.
You know, because as you can see in my history, I love jumping into something and making it, you know, improving it or making it better.
Parachuting in.
You know, if the bush is on fire, even more, the better. So, and I had no connection with the disabled community. I have nobody in my family like that. I had connection from the veteran perspective, but
yeah.
That was light. So that was a whole different world to me.
And you really liked Chris and you really liked him.
Yeah. Chris is just, he's just easy to get along with. And I liked him. And, you know, I had like I said, it was two concerns. Is one working for Marine, which that was quickly, you know, dissipated. But the other one was like, I have no experience in nonprofit, which turns out that, you know, at the end of the day, a nonprofit is just a business. We still create value. Still,
yeah.
You know, all of those things. It's just, we don't make more widgets and hire salespeople. So I started with them, you know, and I guess my why is like, okay, this seems like something completely different. Right.
Okay.
I liked Chris. And yeah, that was really, there was nothing else that drove me other than the fact like, hey, cool opportunity.
Right. It wasn't a personal thing from your, like you said, your family. No.
Right. So being with Chris, you know, working with him and because he's in a chair and opening my eyes to the world, how it was for people with disabilities. So he was in a chair. He had when I met him, he was still in a manual chair. You know, so getting around, getting involved with things, you know, you're like, oh, wow, this world is upside down. And one of the terms I use is like, people aren't disabled. It's the world that is disabled.
Yeah.
They've created an environment for the bulk of ability. Right. And somehow forgotten about those other people who have different abilities, you know? So like just say, hey, can you, Chris, come on over to my house. Well, he can't because he can't get up the steps.
Oh.
Right? Those simple little things.
Yeah.
That you don't think about. So as I started to get more time there and talk with Chris and learn from him, and I've always had this thing about bullies, right? I don't like bullies. You see a different side of me when it comes to a bully. And I just felt like the world is a bully to people with different abilities, right? And, you know, so there's,
I never thought of it that way. I never thought of it that way.
Right. It's really, when you put it in that perspective, at least for me, it was like, okay, I am all in. And it grabbed me. Uh-oh. Yeah. It grabbed me enough to make it personal. And it became a personal mission of mine that there was a need for a voice. And Chris has a great voice, or he had a great voice. You know, he's been an advocate all his life. And it just needs, we need more people to advocate for people with different, you know, alternate disabilities. Because they're people, right? At the end of the day, we're all just people. We all have a disability. Some of it you can see, some of it you can't, you know, and it's not a negative word. It's just, it's a different ability. So it was, you know, I would say, I don't know what time frame, but it just became a very, I became very driven in what we were doing.
Yeah.
And it was easy, right? About a year and a half into it, Chris called myself and our development director into at his house and 22, 23, somewhere around a year and a half, 2 years into it. And he called us over and he's like, "Hey, my condition has advanced." And we're like, "Okay." So he kind of filled us in on that. And we really didn't see anything, but after that we started to see some mild changes. Unfortunately, those changes have significantly advanced. So he is no longer really in the day-to-day. He was the CEO and the founder, which he still is the founder. So 2024 in January, we moved him from the CEO role into a new role I created for him called the Chief Motivation Officer. And I assumed the CEO role, so from COO to CEO. So to protect him, to give him that space he needs to, do what he needs to do for himself. He's always been selfless, right? And that's why the reputation of the foundation, the reputation of him, is something unlike I've never seen before. I think it's something aspiring for everybody to try to achieve. What he's done is just remarkable. He's done it just because he is who he is. And that's even the best part. So, any of the successes that a person has, it's just, it just pales it sometimes. But so I guess we're 4 years, my math is right, we're here. We've had, incredible growth. When I started,
I'm sure you had. So tell us, what are you up to now? Like, what's going on? Because you and I talked about it before you came on the show.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll get to this in a second, right? What we have planned, but just in this past year, each year we've been leveling up. I've implemented, we're in the middle, we're still doing implementation of digital transformation, letting, technology and data drive decisions. We've implemented EOS 2 years ago to help, guide the strategic direction, develop the business plan. When I started, there was two employees. Now I think we're at nine. Right, we're doing a lot of things to enhance our transparency. We've programming. When I started, I think we were probably doing 250 hours a year in programming. We're on track to do 1,000 or so this coming year. We have programs for all sorts of people with disabilities. Or actually, have program services and events. So programs are all free, or they're not free. They're donor or foundation supported, and they are open to people of all abilities. We're inclusive, right? So we have adaptive fitness, inclusive fitness, and then we also have a veteran programming. So for veterans, disabled veterans, as well as able-bodied veterans. From a services perspective, we have an adaptive, personal adaptive training program, which is absolutely an amazing program, unlike anything you've ever seen. Basically, we pick up where traditional care medicine leave off. So if somebody had just lost a limb, they're like, go through the, OT, PT, insurance says, hey, you've gone as far as you can go. Well, maybe they want a bit more quality out of their life. Maybe they want to reach a cabinet. Maybe they want to compete for the adaptive CrossFit games. Or maybe they just want to stand. So all stories that we have that I can provide to
But
you.
daily functions. They just, like you said, reach a cabinet.
Right. But we also have people who, two folks, one's a quad amputee, one's a below knee amputation, who went through this program, qualified for the adaptive CrossFit games. One person, the doctor said, you're not going to be able to walk or stand ever again. Well, she's standing for almost an hour. She's walked 40, 50 steps. They're just one in hundreds of stories. And our events, right? Like we said, we have our traditional ones, the Got the Nerve, which is a triathlon inclusive event. We're working on building that out. The plan for that is to go national, for Got the Nerve. So it'll be a multi, it'll be a record, a competitive series, whether it's a triathlon, whether it's a duathlon, whatever the case is. We are a USAT triathlon Paris series partner, so we've made alignment with them. We have an I'm Able Games coming up on September 20th, so that is really That's a lot of fun. So last year was the first year we've done it. So it's a combination of a few different things where I'll run, walk, roll. There's a wing eating contest. There's some CrossFit. There's the trifecta. You can do all three of them. All abilities welcome. All ages
Oh
welcome.
my God.
Mention the
I
wing
love the
eating.
way you include the wing contest.
So there's that. That's at the Reading Airport. So it's party on the tarmac. It's a great experience. This past year in March, we had our annual Bash fundraiser. We had 800 people at the Bash. And I think we close to $400,000 raised. So for
Wow.
context, 6 or 7 years ago, it was 50 people in the basement. They raised like $60,000,
Yeah.
$70,000. So that's always a lot of fun. Sunday, November 2nd, we have our Ruck and Roll. So for all you veterans out there, no matter
Yeah.
what your ability it is, we are going to do a ruck, also on the website. So there's a Ruck and Roll. So if you can, whatever your ability is, come on out. That's, like I said, that's in Reading. Information's on our website. But
Is that where your headquarters is, Reading?
yeah, so our head we have a gym facility in Wyomissing. So cross 422 in Wyomissing there. So West Reading, Wyomissing. So
Yeah.
that's where our gym is. That's where we do the bulk of our programming. But yeah.
Holy moly. Alex, what a journey, man.
Oh, it's been fantastic. I'm blessed, right? I feel that I've led a golden life, if you will. It's whatever the term is. It hasn't been all peaches and cream, but
No, I get that. Yeah.
experiences and memories and things to look back on, that's a gift.
And I love that you're saying that you feel like, I always felt like I was one of the luckiest girls on earth, but when you looked at the journey, they're like, "Are you sure? Are you sure you feel like that?" But it's your mindset, it's your attitude.
It's where it starts from the time you get up to the time you put your feet, back up in the bed at night. Your mindset drives what you do. And like I said, what you plan for, what you don't will happen, right? Those five tips are what I, are my everyday. And sometimes you forget. That's okay. But at the end of the day,
But because it's such, like you said, a habit, and I see your habits determine more than you think, you get back there quicker. You don't steer off so long.
simple things like I get up every morning and make my bed. People are, my grandkids are like, why do you make your bed every day? Right? Because it's that one simple thing that I know that I've accomplished.
Yeah. Oh, it matters. The little things. And I'm a checker offer. I like checking off. It makes me feel good.
It does. And it's like you that's a discipline, right? Life is a discipline. It's mindset, it's how you approach it. So I failed a lot. I've learned a lot.
I'm glad you have. And I
Yep.
love what you're doing. I find it fascinating and exciting. And I'm
Thank you.
sure there's more to come.
Yes.
I could talk to you forever, Chris. There's so many other places I wanted to ask questions, and we have so many questions, but that's going to have to be for another day because even with this, we went way over. And I'm trying to decide still right now, do I want to leave the excitement in of Dawson coming in and knocking over something?
The
All right. Before we go, Chris, though, is there anything that we didn't get in, parting words you want to have to the Let's Keep It Real people?
I like that term. Let's keep it real. Be real with yourself and be humble and be forgiving to yourself. I think that's a good way to go.
Yeah, because if you're that way with yourself, you're going to be that way with others, man.
Leadership starts from within.
All right. How can they find you?
Oh my gosh. So go to imablefoundation.org. Imablefoundation.org. You will see everything that's going on, what we're doing, what's planned, what's upcoming. We're going to be launching a new website in a couple of weeks, I hope. I'm so excited about that. So there's that. And then you can find me on LinkedIn as well. I am an active networker. I'm also the president of CPeng, which is a executive networking group. So it's a nonprofit executive networking group. You can connect with me there. So, active a little bit. So there's a couple of places you can. And I am open and willing to talk to anybody because I can learn from everybody. And you never know if they're there for you or you're there for them.
It's usually both. It's usually both. Chris, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it. And I'm
Alex.
so, did I say Chris? Oh my, you know what you're doing? Because you're the guy is Chris.
Yeah, I know. He's pretty cool.
That
Was on your listeners will be like, who's Chris?
know who Chris is because you mentioned him. Anyhow, thank you, Alex. So, I just want to thank you for all you're doing. I really appreciate it. I love that you're making such a huge, positive, powerful impact in the world. I really do.
Hope so.
You are. You know it. And I hope it inspires others to do the same. My Let's Keep It Real people, we really appreciate you being on. And Alex and I, AKA Chris, no, Alex, I'm kidding, is very grateful. Anyone you want to share it, like it, subscribe, it does mean a lot. And until next time, you know what I'm going to say. Thanks, Alex, and toodles.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share and subscribe if you enjoyed the show, and remember, keep spreading the positive.